Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you again on a Wednesday morning. Last time we chatted, the Bucks had just as many losses as they do now. They've kept their winning ways going. They have virtually no home games on their ledger, but they have run off now four straight victories. That included a win in Chicago on Monday night, kind of par for the course. A performance that wasn't necessarily pretty, but Giannis was amazing, and the Bucks ended up winning. That seems to be sort of the running theme this year. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel podcast, and I am joined on the other line, as always, by Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up later in this podcast, we will have a conversation with a member of the Milwaukee Bucks, Wesley Matthews, who many of you, I'm sure, know from his days as a Marquette Golden Eagle, maybe even before that, as a member of the Madison Memorial basketball team. Won a state title with the Spartans back in the day in 2005. So wanted to ask him a lot about his playing days here in Wisconsin, being back in Wisconsin with the Milwaukee Bucks, and a little bit about that Marquette-Wisconsin rivalry that of course came to pass again on Sunday. But Matt, right now let's chat about these Milwaukee Bucks. And the thing you wrote about after Monday's win over the Chicago Bulls is kind of been a recurring theme in regards to Giannis Antetokounmpo in terms of fouls. He was in foul trouble again. All these offensive fouls he got called for on Monday night. And now the question is he getting a fair shake from officials? It's hard to officiate a guy who's of this caliber, this stature. He's unlike a lot of players in the history of basketball. And it seems like more than in past years, he's been frustrated with the way the fouls have been called. What are you seeing there? Are you seeing him getting sort of an unfair shake? And are there things he can do? I mean, he said really nothing after the Bulls game, but are there things he can do to keep this from happening?
Yeah, the whistle that Giannis gets has always been a touchy subject because it's so hard to officiate him. He is constantly driving into the paint. You know, he has that size, that strength, those crazy long legs, and the ability to go from one place to another in a way that a lot of other players can't do. And so I get that that's kind of difficult, but there's definitely been a frustration about the Bucks. In the locker room, coaching staff, whatever. With the whistle that Giannis gets and doesn't get. I think, the five offensive fouls on Monday night, the first two, I think, were legit. You look at those plays in isolation, and you say, okay, well, you can't grab Larry Markkanen with two hands and, like, shove him. Like, that's going to get you something. And then, trying to drive a little bit and then stop against Thad Young, and he kind of push that elbow out real far, and when you extend your arm that much and you get that much separation on a step back, like, they're usually going to call that. But then in the second half, that's where things got a little dicier. He tries to drive down the left side of the lane, and Chandler Hutchison just kind of like slides in at the last second and is already kind of falling back as Giannis makes contact, and there's a foul there. Chris Dunn does something similar where I feel like Giannis, and then the other side of the lane now, Giannis tried to avoid contact as much as possible, and it was kind of an awkward thing, but the Bulls get the call. And then the last one of the five was one you almost never see called. He's trying to back down Thad Young again, and he kind of uses his off arm while he's dribbling to kind of push away Young's arm. And that draws a whistle. I mean, it was right in front of the ref. And sure, like, there is contact. I guess you can call that a foul. But they normally don't call that a foul. So that's kind of the offensive foul front. And then when the whistle wasn't blowing, was also an issue that, I think the Bucks were confused by, and Giannis was confused by, because the Bulls seemed like they had a plan for how to handle him, which was if they can't get in his way, everyone just reach in and try and swipe at the ball and all that stuff. And there were a lot of times where Giannis would, you know, be able to finish through traffic, or maybe, you know, might get held up a little bit. Where there's definitely some contact that went uncalled. There were a few plays where he kind of put his arms up in the air. He wasn't sure why he wasn't getting a whistle. He did end up drawing 10 fouls on the night, which is pretty crazy. I mean, drawing 10 fouls is a lot in a game. But there were also moments where he might have drawn another one, and that call just didn't come. I know in the third quarter, after he was called for charging on Chandler Hutchinson, he drives that left side of the lane again. Hutchinson doesn't step in, but then Larry Markkanen is right there, and there's clear contact. Both players kind of, you know, go down, and Giannis starts to flip the ball at the rim as he's falling. No call. And I think they credited that as like a bad pass and a steal for the Bulls. And shortly thereafter, Bud was called for a technical, arguing with the refs during a timeout that he called, just trying anything to get them to recognize his guy. So, Giannis has 23 offensive fouls through 13 games this season. He's averaging 4 fouls a game. He showed off, maybe not showed off, but like, you know, when asked about the whistle that he gets or doesn't get, you know, he kind of looked at it, his right hand and just counted like the open like cuts and scratches that he has from the game, counting off 3 of them. So he definitely takes a beating. There's a big physical toll. And the kind of most expansive answer we got was when I was talking to Brooke Lopez, and I'm not trying to get the guy fined, but I do want to, you know, have a good answer, a question about his teammate. And I kind of just said, hey, like, you know, Brooke, like, Giannis has, you know, an interesting whistle. What do you think when you see that? And also the way that Giannis doesn't respond to the lack of calls or to the offensive fouls called against him. Like, cause he usually is able to kind of like take a second, take a deep breath and just kind of like push it down and not let his emotions out. And Brooke just kind of shook his head and he's like, hey, it's bizarre. You know, and I'm quoting here. He says, I don't want Bud to get mad at me or to get fined, but the difference between him and the way other guys are called, I think the discrepancies between the two, it's pretty wild and mind-boggling to me. I mean, he's a tough call, obviously. I imagine he's difficult to call, but it's definitely bizarre to me. And then he later went on and mentioned that a lot of teams, their plan for defense is to just fall down and not actually play defense. Giannis didn't really get into it too much other than showing off the cuts and stuff on his hands. But I think that if you go on Bucks Twitter or if you watch Bucks games, you'll see that, you know, Giannis, he's definitely tough to officiate. And I joked with Brooke after he talked. I said, you might get a better whistle than Giannis does. And he kind of laughed. He's like, yeah, it's mind-boggling.
Do you think we talk about the superstar whistle a lot and that there are some players who just seem to get that sort of quote unquote respect from officials? I know that that seemed, at least to me, to be more crystal clear when you had guys like Michael Jordan in the 90s. And I guess I haven't really interrogated it in a long time. LeBron James, I'm sure, gets some of that treatment. But you've seen guys all around the league who are at kind of the superstar level or close to the superstar. Do we overstate that? Is it maybe not as obvious? You know, is it maybe just that superstars are good at avoiding, you know, drawing fouls or committing fouls? Or do you think the superstar whistle is 100% a thing? Because obviously the next step is then why wouldn't Giannis be getting that, you know, getting that? And maybe in some cases he has in past years. I don't even know.
I think it's a little overblown. I think the referees, you know, if you ask them, they would say they're trying to call everyone the same way and be fair to the game. You know, but I feel like sometimes if there's a 50-50 call, maybe it goes to the guy who is more aggressive, who is, more proven. And those things tend to be going towards superstars. And, you know, there are sometimes, you know, what makes it kind of confounding is you look at Monday's game and there were situations where Giannis, you know, went to the rim and, you know, had a little bit of contact or a lot of contact on the way there. Nothing gets called. And then there's like a play in the fourth quarter where he gets like a little bump and they call that. And it's like, really? Like, you didn't call when there was a ton of contact before that, but now you're calling the little bump? Like, it just kind of seems inconsistent is probably the best way to say it. You know, and maybe when it comes to like superstars, like, does James Harden draw a lot of fouls? Yes. But is James Harden also regarded as one of the best in the league at that particular skill? Like, drawing fouls, like, is a skill. Some guys, like, don't know how to, you know, position their body in such a way to draw contact while also staying in control and being able to finish. You know, some people, you know, like Chris Middleton is really good at drawing fouls on shooting threes. Like, he just kind of has a knack for timing it out and, like, landing in such a way that he can get contact maybe on his legs or maybe, you know, get a little hip check while he's coming around the screen and be able to sell that while making a three and then staying kind of true to his form. So, you know, guys have a skill in terms of drawing fouls. You know, I think that sometimes Giannis gets hurt by that in the sense that he is strong enough that guys can hit his arms on the way to the hoop and it doesn't change his trajectory, doesn't impede his path to the rim. Doesn't mean he didn't get hit. It just means that it didn't affect him overtly on his way to doing whatever he was going to do already. You know, and I think with the offensive fouls, I think teams, you know, they know that he wants to get downhill. They know that he wants to get into the lane. And that really, outside of like putting two or three guys around him, they don't have a great chance of stopping him. And so what do? You try to, you know, take advantage of his aggressiveness. You try to put guys in there, especially smaller guys, because if guys who are smaller than him are absorbing contact, you know, the league and the referees, they tend to give, you know, the benefit of the doubt to those guards, to those smaller guys, because they're the ones getting, you know, bowled over by somebody who's almost 7 feet tall. And it looks worse. You know, if he runs into somebody who's, you know, about his size, I think I was talking about this yesterday, like the best case scenario for him is like what we saw last year when he would go against Ben Simmons, where Ben Simmons is close to Giannis's size height wise, definitely giving up some like some weight and some muscle and things like that. But Giannis can, you know, back him down in the post, can be a little bit more physical with him. And it's not as big of an issue because Simmons isn't necessarily going to fall down. And if he does fall down, refs are like, well, they're about the same size, so like that's just on him. Also, you know, if Giannis is kind of throwing elbows a little bit, or if he's moving his shoulders into him, Ben Simmons, it's not gonna hit him in the face. It's gonna hit him in the arms or the shoulders, the chest, somewhere where you would expect that he could absorb that contact, hold his ground, and like everybody can, you know, continue play. But when, you know, the Bulls try to put Ryan Arcidiakono on him at times, the Celtics put Marcus Smart on him at times, you know, those guys, like, they're going to, if they go down, it's like, oh, man, like, Giannis was being, like, way too strong there. Or like, maybe he hit them in the face because they're shorter and, like, that's kind of where his arms swing around. So, you know, I think that he, you know, he's faced that for a long time. You know, teams have tried all kinds of things to try and slow him down getting to the rim. It's something he hasn't seen before. You know, but he just needs to kind of continue to improve with his awareness of the defensive situation, knowing that how teams are going to try to deal with him on the offensive end, how they're going to try to take fouls. And, you know, like you mentioned before, he said he doesn't have to do anything different. He's like, hey, you know, I want to be aggressive. I want to go downhill. You know, if I'm getting offensive fouls, that means I'm being aggressive, and that's fine, and I'll deal with it. You know, the impressive thing was that he had 5 offensive fouls on Monday, spent 34 minutes on the court, no defensive fouls. Like, so he was playing really good defense without fouling. You know, he and Brooke Lopez, you know, locking down the paint together, Brooke 5 blocks, and Giannis was able to, you know, when he had 5 fouls, he was able to cede things to Brooke, and not worry so much about contesting or being overly aggressive because he knew that Brooke was there helping him out. So I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, that would be one. But it'll be interesting to see how you know, even if he wants to be aggressive, how he adjusts in certain situations and how he's also called the rest of the way.
One way to avoid contact, I guess, on the offensive end would be to shoot threes. And that's what Giannis has done a little bit more this year, more effectively this year. You wrote about that a couple games ago when the Bucks handled the Indiana Pacers. As people know by now, Malcolm Brogdon did not play in that game. To our chagrin, he was injured along with like the rest of the Pacers. So it was a tough moment for them off of back-to-back. The Bucks went into Indianapolis and won handily. But Giannis is shooting the three ball very well, and it's a good thing because guys like Brook Lopez, Eric Bledsoe have not. They're below 30%. The Bucks as a team are a little bit below where they were last year. They were about 35% last year. They're right now about 33.5%. Their opponents are shooting, I believe, slightly better, not markedly so. So that's obviously a concern. This is a team that takes a ton of threes. They always have, and they're, like you said in your story, they're getting good looks. It's not a question of ball movement. It's not a question of selection. It's just they're not going down, and I don't know if there's another way to fix that. Sometimes shots just don't fall. I think that's sort of the fundamental thing with basketball. Sometimes it doesn't matter. The shots don't go down. So I don't know if the Bucks can really address this in any meaningful way, but having Giannis shoot threes at least opens things up maybe ever so slightly and has enabled them to get to the rim, which we talked about was suffering early in the season. And now it seems with Chris Middleton out, they have addressed that. When you see the team struggling in the three-point game, do you feel like that's something that's just going to ebb and flow back in their favorable direction at some point? Or do you think there's some serious concern here that this year's team just might not have the marksmanship that last year's did?
I think it's part of the ebbs and flows. It's a lot of the same guys. I mean, I don't think Brook Lopez became like a below average or bad three-point shooter overnight. I think that, you know, he's taking the same kinds of shots, those catch and shoots from the top of the key, from the wings, from the places he's comfortable. Eric Bledsoe has not been great, from the three-point line in the past, but he's starting to show some signs. He's kind of getting back to maybe where he was before. Dante DiVincenzo, Sterling Brown, they're generally making shots at a decent rate. Wes Matthews hasn't taken all that many, and he's gotten off to a slow start. George Hill's been shooting them pretty well. They obviously missed Middleton, who puts up the most three-pointers on the team, or at least he has this season, and he's shot them at a pretty high rate, near 40%. But, you know, that those things are going to happen. The important thing for the Bucks is that, you know, they've still been able to rack up wins while shooting poorly. They have the 23rd best, or was the eighth worst, three-point percentage in the league at 33.6% this season. They're of the mind that, you know, that number will creep back up, that they'll get the shots that they want. They'll continue to get the shots that they want. They'll be able to knock them down. And when that happens, when they start, you know, really connecting at a high rate, even for a game or two, you know, those games just won't be close, you know, because they'll have like kind of the full package and everybody kind of firing on all cylinders. But as you mentioned, Giannis, you know, he's been their best three-point shooter over the past six games, which is saying something. He's 14 of 33 over the past six games. That's 42.4%. You know, he's putting up 5.5 threes a game. He's very confident, from certain spots in the court. He's shooting almost solely pull-ups. You know, he's not very good at catch and shoot threes, and the Bucks as a team have not been good on catch and shoot threes this season. Something that they were very good at last year. But he likes the pull ups. He likes the rhythm, things that he can, reproduce in practice, shots that he works on every game. You know, when he's out there a couple hours before the game, you know, he's going through progressions of working in the paint, shooting free throws, shooting from the mid range, shooting from all around the 3-point arc, you know, and he practices these kind of one dribble pull up threes, particularly from the top of the key and at the wings. And so he has a repeatable shot that he likes to do and he's comfortable with, that he can build rhythm with. And right now he's got him going, and teams are giving him space. You know, they're not going to get all the way up into him at the 3-point line, because they know if they do that, he can get a step on them, and then suddenly he has a path to the rim that's going to be difficult to stop. So when he can get those pull up threes and get them in rhythm, have his feet set and do everything that he does in practice, you know, he's getting them to fall at a good clip. And, you know, guys have said, you know, that when he's making those threes, they can feel the gravity shift. You know, they know that everybody already has their eyes on Giannis in terms of the defense. But then when he's making those threes, guys come up, creep up just a little bit more, still giving him space, but it creeps up just a little bit more, and he's able to then find passes and find other guys and operate at a kind of a different way. But I think overall as a team, I think they, like I said, they miss Chris Middleton. It's going to be helpful for them when he comes back sometime, probably in early December. And I think that 3-point shooting percentage will at some point start to creep back up. But for now, I think they're pretty happy with at least the way Giannis is shooting it.
I want to talk about Eric Bledsoe here in a second, but I think what we just heard there in the background was your dog making its podcast debut. Tell us everything we didn't need to know about the Velasquez dog.
Yeah, that's Rudy. He is, I think somebody's at the door, so he's not thrilled. but he's generally pretty chill, cattle dog mix, couple years old. He likes to run around the dog park, doesn't like to be on a leash. You know, typical dog stuff. He's a good boy.
He is a good boy. Welcome to the podcast, Rudy. I did mention that I wanted to talk a little bit more about Bledsoe on the last podcast and kind of ran out of time, but we did discuss him. We had a whole podcast, really, where he was kind of front and center, that he was struggling, and we were worried about it. And now, I think he's probably one of the least of the worries. You know, we just mentioned he's not shooting the ball well from three-point range, but that's never really been his strength anyway. It feels like he has really emerged as the Bucks' second best player, and with Chris Middleton out, that's important. That's obviously something the Bucks have needed. Are you seeing that as well? Do you think Eric Bledsoe has found something, and where, I guess, do you still think he needs to improve, and where has he already found some footing in the early part of the season?
Yeah, I think he's been on a pretty good stretch, you know, up until the game against Chicago, when he was only 2 for 11 from the floor, had a couple of shots at the rim, didn't go down. You know, just never really got into a rhythm in the game. But he still, you know, I think was a plus 15 in the game. I think he was a positive presence defensively. He had 6 rebounds, 5 assists. He had a block, only 1 turnover. He's done a pretty good job limiting his turnovers for the most part. There have been a couple games where, you know, you have 5 or 4, a couple games with 3. But for the most part, I think that he's been pretty good with, you know, the way he's handled things. The last time the Bucks played the Bulls, just a few days ago, he was a huge part of that win. You know, he was 12 of 14 from the floor and went 12 for 12 on his 2-point attempts, with 8 assists and really, was moving the ball around well, picking his spots, looked really, really fluid. I think he's been pretty good to really good since the start of the season. Had a little bit of a slow start, but he's gotten going. He's looked for his shots and looked to get into rhythm early in games. He's driving to the rim with authority, finishing well, finding teammates, making good passes, playing good defense, just doing all the things that the Bucks expect him to do. And, you know, the 3-pointers, they may not be falling at a high rate, but there have been games where, you know, he has gotten into a flow. I mean, he was 4 of 8 on threes against the Clippers. He was 3 of 6 on threes against the Thunder, games they definitely needed him to step up. I think that first Chicago game that I mentioned, that was the first game without Chris Middleton, and to have him, you know, put up 31 points, go 7 of 8 from the free throw line, in addition to his 12 of 12 on 2-point shots. It was exactly what the Bucks needed to see in terms of finding someone to step up with Middleton out. So the last couple games, you know, haven't been his best. You know, there are going to be ebbs and flows like that. But I think for the most part, just the way that he's approached, you know, maybe the last 2 weeks, and the play that he's put forth has definitely been a market improvement from the start of the season, and more in line with what the Bucks need to see from him.
Averaging 16 points, up above 5 rebounds, 5 assists a game. So he is holding it together. I should have mentioned that obviously the shooting performance against the Bulls on Monday night, not as good, but like you said, he's been there for the most part this season, and now the Bucks finally get to showcase what they have. They're 10-3, and they've only played, what are we up to? Is it only 4 home games, right? They've just been totally on the road all season long.
Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, 10 of the first 14 on the road, only 2 home games in a row. So, like, you know, they had that first game in Houston, 2 home games, and then, you know, two road games, a back-to-back where they're at home, and then boom, four-game road trip, come home for one, three-game road trip. So they've been, you know, traveling all around the country and picking up wins on along the way. I mean, to be 7-2 heading into Wednesday's game against the Atlanta Hawks, you know, in this road stretch, I would say that's pretty impressive. You don't expect most teams to be able to go on the road the way the Bucks have and have the level of success that they've had. They were very much in that game in Utah that they lost at the last second on that Bogdanovich three from the corner. And, you know, they were very much in that game where they lost in Boston against the Celtics in the sense that they were up by, I think, what was it, 17 points, 15 points at halftime. And they seem to be in total control of that game before melting down. So, you know, they haven't been out of it in terms of their road games. They haven't really had a game where they have, for the full 48 minutes, just kind of fallen apart, at least on the road. So I think that's been a positive for them. They've, according to Basketball Reference, they have the toughest strength of schedule so far in the league, which I think makes sense given all the road games and a lot of games against high-level opponents. When you look at having already played the Clippers, granted it was without Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, but they played the Rockets. They've played, you know, the Raptors, the Celtics, you know, a bunch of teams that have, you know, gotten off to pretty good starts this season. So, you know, it's not like they necessarily have an easy return home either, in the sense that they're playing Wednesday in Atlanta. They come home on Thursday for the Portland Trail Blazers. Maybe we'll see Carmelo Anthony for that game. But having a back-to-back coming home isn't exactly how you want to come home. But then having a stretch of four straight home games, I think that's more like it.
Yeah, four in a row after that game against Atlanta, and then 9 of 11 overall at Pfizer Forum. The Bucks get the kickback from the crazy start to the season that that we've been talking about here, mostly road games. As we look around the league, we're kind of talking about a little bit that Celtics team that beat the Bucks, rallied to beat the Bucks. They right now are leading in the Eastern Conference overall standings with just two losses on the year. The Bucks are a game back. That's probably what we would have expected. The Sixers a couple games back. Miami is still right up there. Obviously, looking at the standings is ridiculous, but just in general, and this could be Western Conference as well, any surprises or anything really jump out at you across the NBA over the first you know, the first few weeks of the season?
I guess in terms of surprises, I would have to skew negative with that, and I didn't think... You know, the Kings got off to a really bad start. I didn't expect that. Obviously, the Warriors have a ton of injuries and are, as of this moment, the worst team in the league, which I don't think anybody had that. You know, you don't want to see Steph out. And, you know, we knew Klay would be out for a long time. And D'Angelo Russell's missed games and Draymond's missed games. And it's just been a mess. I think in terms of positives, the Phoenix Suns have been really tough. You know, they're 7-5. Monty Williams has them playing a really fun, cohesive brand of basketball, getting a couple veterans in there, and Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines, I think, has helped stabilize them. They've been an exciting team. I think, you know, Devin Booker has benefited from, you know, the coaching change and from the changes around him in terms of the roster construction. I don't know how much it'll last, but, you know, for them to be 7-5 right now, it's saying something. You know, they've put a few teams on notice in the way they've played, and they've made things tough. As Bucks fans know, they made things tough in the Bucks last year, even when they were bad, winning both games against the Bucks. So that was a thing. I guess if I had to pick something from the Eastern Conference, I guess it's kind of just surprising that the Nets are 5-8. That they, you know, granted, like, Kevin Durant won't play till next year, and Kyrie has been hurt recently, but they really haven't gotten it going. The Charlotte Hornets are a feisty bunch. They've got a bunch of young guys,
bunch of buzzer beaters too.
Yeah, I mean they're doing some interesting stuff. I still don't think that they're excited about giving Terry Rozier all that money that they gave him, but you know, at 6-8, you know, that's not a great record right now. It's good for eighth in the East. You know, but they've been passable. They've been good. I mean, they've had interesting games. I look at Philly's 8-5 record, and I'm not all that surprised. I think I remember saying on the podcast or elsewhere before the start of the season that I thought the Bucks had May and June questions, whereas the Sixers have, you know, October, November, December questions in terms of how all their pieces fit together and how they work and how they adjust. Like, we had an idea of how the Bucks were going to be this year, and so far I think they've been in line with that. But we don't know how they're going to handle the playoffs. And the thing with the Sixers is we don't know how they're going to be right now and how they're going to work together and how healthy they're going to be and all that stuff. How they're going to make up for the losses of Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick, guys who created a lot of their shooting last year and who took over at the end of games. And so the Sixers, we expect they'll have a really good defense. But offensively, how are they going to get the job done on a consistent basis? I think they're still figuring that out. And obviously, they've had injury, issues at times too. They've played 9 road games just like the Bucks, and they're 4-5, and the Bucks are 7-2. So that's kind of a good comparison point in the sense that, the Bucks aren't unique in having a road heavy schedule, and they've handled it differently. Or they've succeeded differently than a team that they're supposed to be, right there with. So I think that, we have a decent snapshot of how things are going to be or how they are for the NBA so far this season. But, there's still, a decent ways to go until maybe that 20-25 game mark when I know in the past coaches have mentioned, that's when you really start to, figure out who teams are. And then when you're game planning, you have a better understanding of what you're going to get from an opposing team on any given night. So still a lot of time left for teams to kind of figure themselves and each other out, at least, for the first draft of the year.
You mentioned Phoenix. They're doing this without DeAndre Ayton taking a step forward because he's been suspended for 25. He's got a 25-game suspension, so that's doubly impressive for Phoenix. And for me, seeing Miami up there and seeing, I guess I should stop being surprised by what Tyler Herro does, but the Wisconsin product as a 19-year-old, coming off the bench primarily, averaging 13.3 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 2.1 assists. It's been a phenomenal start for him. A lot of young faces in Miami helping Jimmy Butler get that team into one of the top 4 spots in the East. So that's certainly something to watch as well. We saw them beat the Bucks at Pfizer Forum earlier this year, and kind of probably the one stinker of a game you can really point to. That Celtics second half was pretty bad too, but the one time where the Bucks really, really just did not look good was their home opener against Miami. He is Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He'll be in Atlanta Wednesday night covering the Bucks against the Hawks, and then finally return home for a 4-game homestand as the Bucks get started right away on the back-to-back against the Blazers on Thursday. Matt, thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, can't wait.
Now I've got my interview here with Wesley Matthews, of course, former Marquette star, former high school star in the state of Wisconsin, newly added to the Milwaukee Bucks. The series struggled a little bit shooting the ball for a guy who is kind of known as a shooter and a solid defender, but obviously it's pretty exciting to have him back. Here's my short interview with him. We talked about all things related to his return home as well as looking back at his career in high school and college. Give a listen. My guest is Wes Matthews, new member of the Milwaukee Bucks, as many of you know by now. Wes, of course, a Madison Memorial standout, Marquette University. You're not with the Bucks for the first time, but was there any point in your career before now where this could have happened or you had an inkling that you might be able to come home or want to come home, or was this the first opportunity for that?
This is really the first opportunity for it. For the first couple of years, I was like, there's no way I want to play at home. I did it before.
Yeah.
I was at Marquette, and it was cool, but I just wasn't ready, and I wouldn't have appreciated it like I do now.
Yeah.
Being 11 years into this and everything. I was kind of eyeing Milwaukee the last 2 years, and the opportunity presented itself.
when you went undrafted out of Marquette, it seems like a lot, the consensus is that worked out really well for you because you obviously have the first kid. Is that how you look at it? That it was a good break, ultimately, that you didn't get drafted?
It worked out how I was supposed to.
Yeah.
A lot of guys say, I was supposed to be drafted at this point. I don't look at it like that. I used to, but
yeah.
It happened how I was supposed to, and it made me, helped make me the man that I am, helped me the player that I am, and grateful about anything else.
Yeah, I think a lot of people know you, you know, from Madison. Dad played at Wisconsin, then you went to Marquette. What does that matchup mean to you? They're going to be playing again here shortly, UW versus Marquette. Is that something, you know, you get excited for, or is that always, just kind of rearview mirror?
Always. Got to be Wisconsin.
Yeah.
My mom went there, too. She was a Hall of Famer there.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, it's definitely a Matthews family tradition, I imagine. Do you still keep in touch with guys from that Marquette team? I mean, I assume you do some of them. Who are some of them?
All of them. I just talked to, I was FaceTiming Jarrell last night.
Yeah.
Two nights ago. We just beat him in fantasy football.
Yeah. I know
you, all those guys.
You got asked about Marcus Howard breaking the all-time scoring record. I'm sure you've seen him play here and there. I think you went to a Marquette game last year. Yeah. Just your impression of him, little guy out there, lighting it up.
Tremendous talent. You know, one of a fearless score. Evolving into a leader, you know, a household name, and I'm happy for him. You know, a guy like that, his stature, his size, you know, it's easy to pigeonhole somebody and say what he can and can't be, but for him to do what he's doing is amazing.
I think you have the three-pointer record in Portland, too, is that right, for a season? You beat Terry Porter in something.
Yeah, three-pointer record.
Three-pointer. So Terry Porter is a big Wisconsin guy as well. Did you ever get a chance to interact with him when you were out in Portland?
Not too much, a little bit. But he was always cool. Professional. He was nice.
Yeah. A question you were just asked about the difference between the Bradley Center and Pfizer Forum. You had a lot of memories in the Bradley Center, but
a lot of memories in Bradley.
Pfizer's is a different ball game.
it's steroided Bradley Center.
Yeah. What did you think the first time you walked in there last year?
I was in awe. It made me proud to be from Wisconsin.
Yeah. How many people come to a Bucks game that is? That are family members of, they're Matthews family members. How large is your contingent?
It depends, fluctuates, but four usually.
Yeah. All right, just your parents.
Just my mom, grandma, aunt, my friend that I grew up with. Cousins come every once in a while.
Yeah. Going back to your high school days, what sticks out? You capped it with the championship in 2005. But what are some of the biggest memories you have during your days at Madison Memorial?
I would say that.
Just that.
But, you know, competing with my friends, you know, a lot of the guys that I grew up with, I'm still friends with now. So, competing with them, sharing that stage with them, and going out on top.
All right, man. Thanks.
That's what we got on this week's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Thanks to Matt Velasquez, Wesley Matthews for joining me this week. We will catch you again about this time next week. Take care.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.